Okay, welcome back, everyone. We're up to Perek Yud Bet, Perek Yud Beis of Malachim Aleph. Let's just do a quick minute review, a 2 minute review of where we ended off 2 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago. A long time ago? Too long. So if you remember, last week was really the transition point in really the quick demise of Shlomo HaMelech in many ways, that what started off as a very promising building of the Beis HaMikdash took a very quick fall with Shlomo HaMelech. Again, the Psukim tell us that he had a love of woman, specifically idolatrous woman, and God obviously did not take too well to that. And as a result, Shlomo's kingdom was being torn apart. If you remember Yeravam ben Nevat, who was the... Anyone remember what his job was? He was the tax collector for who? That's going to be important. Anyone remember? No. He was in Mitzrayim, right? Vayafkedo so lechol sevel Beit Yosef. So he was in charge of collecting taxes for Beit Yosef. And God appoints him. Remember, he meets Machia, and Achia tears the garment, and he says that this is representing the tearing of the kingdom, and it's going to be split, and you're going to be the king over one, but I'm not going to do it during Shlomo's lifetime. And at the end of last week's chapter, Shlomo dies. Now, once Shlomo dies, so now, of course, the kingdom can be split. And that's exactly what's going to happen in our chapter. As a word of introduction, as I was preparing this chapter last night, in so many ways, it is very applicable and very timely. So I'll make certain references, but I'll let you infer the rest. It's this political intrigue is so many side points that we can really talk about. And again, I want to touch upon a lot of them today, even if we don't delve into them, but to give you food for thought, that you should know just how relevant stories that took place many thousands of years ago still are nowadays. So if you look in Perek Yud Bet, on page 838, you only have one sheet today, so on the side that says a 12 on the top left-hand side, that's what we're starting with. Yelech Rechavam Shechem, so Rechavam is Shlomo HaMelech's son. So Rechavam goes to Shechem, ki Shechem ba kol Yisrael laham lichoso. So he is coronating himself, and he's coming to Shechem to be made the king. Now, two interesting notes right off the bat. Number one, what should strike you as weird is why Shechem, right? We all know that if you wanted to coronate a king, so you would choose the capital of the Jewish people, which is Yerushalayim. So why Shechem? So number one, the commentaries point out that Shechem is where Har Grizim and Har Eval are. That when the Jewish people in the Parshas Devarim, in Sefer Devarim, when it tells us that when the Jewish people go into Israel, so they're going to gather on two mountains, remember, and they're going to do the blessings and the curses. So that took place in Shechem. So off the bat, we know that Shechem obviously is a large place and has a significant capacity as a meeting place. It's symbolic of a meeting place. More importantly, though, is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Shechem is a place that is inclined toward tragedy. And the Gemara says, what two tragedies took place in Shechem? So number one, we know the sale of Yosef took place in Shechem. And number two, the Gemara says that this is where Malchus David was divided. And Dina, right? But yes, Dina. So it's the Bermuda Triangle, so to speak, the Gemara says. Bad things tend to happen there. Now the fact that the Gemara references the sale of Yosef as one of the bad things that happened in Shechem already should clue us in that Shechem is the capital city of Yosef. Right? Yosef, again, we're going to divide the kingdoms into two parts today. There's going to be Malchus Yehuda, and there's going to be Ephraim, which is symbolic of Yosef. Okay? Shechem is the capital city of Yosef, which will differentiate itself from Yehuda. Yehuda, of course, aligns itself with Shlomo, Malchus Beis David. And so immediately it's conjuring up a divide that is not foreign to us, that should be very familiar to us. And that's a divide that started with Rachel and Leah, which started with Yaakov's two wives, which continued with Yosef in Yehuda, of course, with the sale Yosef, Yehuda was one of the instigators of the sale of Yosef. Okay? And in Jewish philosophy, in Jewish thought, throughout history, especially in Hasidic thought, so the Yosef-Yehuda divide is a significant divide. For those who come to People of the Book, so we great rivalries. So we learned 2 weeks ago about Rav Kook a little bit. And you'll remember that in Rav Kook's eulogy for Herzl, so he referenced this divide between Yehuda and Yosef, that one was supposed to take care of the material needs of the Jewish people, one took care of the physical needs, and that's why Rav Kook said we need a Mashiach ben Yosef before Mashiach ben David. Again, Yehuda, you need to take care of the physical, you need to arrange things physically before to create an infrastructure so that spiritually we have what to deal with. Same way we have a body, you can't have a soul without a body. We need our bodies, and then we have a soul. So this Yehuda-Yosef divide is significant both in terms of what we know in Sefer Bereishis and what we're going to know throughout history. It's a symbolic divide. So by going to Shechem, right off the bat, he's obviously differentiating himself from Yerushalayim. Okay, and that, again, is significant whether he did it purposefully, whether he didn't do it purposefully, who knows. But that at least should clue us into that a little bit. Okay? The second thing, I thought Rashi pointed this out, but I don't see it here. But it's definitely here. You'll take my word for it. Trying to find it. Right. So Radak says, similar to what I just said. Radak says, Shechem hayam mishevet Ephraim. Shechem was from Shevet Ephraim. V'nira ke'en nevua asher amar achia ha-shiloni li'iravam. Noda lefi shalchu Yisrael v'karu lo bikshu limtso alila lahasiv ha-melucha li'iravam. Lefichach lo ratzu lavo li'irushalayim. Ela ba'u l'shechem. He says a little differently. He says that he was nervous that if he came to Yerushalayim, they would use it as a pretext to steal the melucha away from him. And so he stayed away from the hotbed of, you know, if there's a whole hullabaloo going on, so you don't always want to interject yourself into there. Sometimes it's better to stay away. But there was someone else, I'm trying to remember. If I can't find it inside, I won't quote it. Okay, we'll go on. I can't find it inside. Okay, Pasuk Bet. So we're in Shechem. Rechavam is appointing himself as the king. That was it. Why does he need to appoint himself as a king? We know that who takes over after a king? Son of the king. Why does there have to be this whole coronation process? It could have happened naturally. So the answer is that we know halachically that the only time you need a coronation is if the transition of power comes under question. If there's a question whether the child is worthy of being the king. And so I guess to undermine any attempts at undermining his own authority, so Rechavam just says, you know what, instead of just making it a seamless transition, I'm going to coronate myself, and that way no one's going to question that I am the king. Vayhi, Pasuk Bet. Vayhi kishmoa Yeravam ben Nevat. V'hu odenu b'mitzrayim asher barach mimnei ha-melech Shlomo. Again, Yeravam, don't forget it, escaped to Mitzrayim because Shlomo HaMelech wanted to kill him for what he perceived as a rebellion against his kingdom. So Yeravam ben Nevat hears that Shlomo dies, Vayeshav Yeravam b'Mitzrayim, Vayishlechu vayikru'u vayavo Yeravam v'chol kahal Yisrael, vayidabru el Rechavam leimor. So Yeravam, who was in exile, right? He was the opposition in exile. So Shlomo HaMelech dies. He comes back from exile, and now he, don't forget, the people like him because he defended the people. Remember what he said last week? We suggested that he was going against Shlomo because of the burden of taxes. So you get the sense that despite the fact that he was a tax collector, people appreciated him because he understood where they were coming from. So he clearly is a leader of a group of people. So together, Yeravam and, it says, V'chol kahal Yisrael. A lot of people. This is not just one or two people. So they come to Rechavam, who's the newly coronated king. They say, Pasuk 4, Dalet. Avicha hiksha es ulenu. Ve'ata ata hakel me'avodas avicha, hakashe ume'ulo ha'kaveda shenasan aleinu ve'navdecha. They said, we're going to make you a deal. We're happy to serve you. We're happy to be your constituents. We just ask one thing in return. And that is that your father created an overbearing burden on us. With the taxes, remember, It costs money to build the Beis HaMikdash, the houses, the palaces, all of the infrastructure. It's a huge undertaking. If you remember previous Pesukim, how much taxes, how many taxes were collected. And so they come to him and they say, we're not going to start an uprising. We're not going to create problems for you. Just lessen the burden of the taxes a little bit. Pasuk Hey, Vayomer Alehem, Lechu Od Shlosha Yamim, Vishuvu Eilai, Vayelchu Ha'am. What does what does Rechavam say? Come back. Right? I got to think about it a little bit. Come back in 3 days. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, if the people are boiling over a little bit, do they want indecision from their king? A newly minted king, what do you have to do? You have to project leadership. You have to project strength. You have to project a sense of being able to make the right decision. Right? Remember the ads that were attacking Hillary was at 3 a.m, do you want her to pick up the phone? Or I think that was the way she attacked Obama in 08, right? Do you want him with the phone at 3 a.m, being indecisive, being wishy-washy? So the Meforshim point out that this isn't necessarily a good thing, that the people wanted a definitive answer. And it shouldn't have been such a complicated definitive answer when the masses come to you and make a seemingly reasonable request. The answer should be, sure, let's compromise. Let's sit across on the table. We'll work something out. Instead, he says, come back in 3 days. Now, what do you think the people were saying over those 3 days? Were they just going to coffee and, you know, sitting by the port side? No, they were simmering, right? Because in a vacuum of leadership, that's where the masses kind of ferment a little bit. And it becomes cancerous because it spreads quickly. Where now all the conversation is, what does the king even need to think about? You think he's really not going to do this? And people, it's festering. Okay? So what does the king do? So he does what we would hope any leader would do when he has a difficult decision to make. He would seek advice. He would seek guidance. Well, we would expect, hopefully, that that's what leaders would do. Vayivaatz ha-melech rechavam es hazakenim asher hayu omdim es pnei shlomo aviv. So who does Rechavam go to? So he had the elder statesmen. He had people who had institutional knowledge. They were the wise ones who were sitting in Shlomo's palace, who used to advise his father. And so he goes to them. He says, right, you picture the old men with the beard sitting and meditating all day and learning Torah all day. These were the sagacious individuals. And so he goes to them and he says, tell me, how should I respond to the people? Okay? Vayidabru elav, and they responded to him lemor, pasuk zayin, im hayom tia eved la'am azeh ve'avaretam ve'anisem ve'dibarta lehem dvarim tovim vayulacha v'adim kol tovim. They say, this makes or breaks your kingdom. If you answer them properly, if you answer them pleasantly, and you show them that you care and that you're empathetic to their needs, they'll be with you. They'll be putty in your hands. You'll have them all in your back pocket. But what does he do? Pasachet. Vayavzov es atzas hazekainim asher yatsuhu. He says, you know what? You guys are a bunch of old nothings. You don't know any better. You guys are half senile by now, right? You know who I'm going to go to? Vayiva eitzas hayiladim asher gadlu ito asher haomdim lefanav. He says, you know, I'm going to ignore you, Rabbi X, Y, and Z, or old wise one X, Y, and Z. And instead, I'm going to go to my buddies. Right? Look how the psukim describe them. It's very interesting. Es hayiladim asher gadlu ito asher haomdim lefanav. The children who grew up with him. Now, Rechavam, I don't remember exactly how old he is, but he's not young at this point. 41, it says? Okay, so he's 41. He's not a child, right? Not a child. And the Pasuk still calls them Yeladim. Why does it call them Yeladim? It's a derogatory term, obviously. It means they never grew up. Now, why would they never have grown up? If you grew up in Shlomo's kingdom. What was life like? And you were one of the privileged ones. Because don't forget, these people grew up with Rechavim, so they were friends with the prince. What was life like for you? You were a spoiled brat. Filled with wealth. Never worked a day in your life. Luxurious lifestyle. Right? You see how like they have like these TV shows like Children of the Rich and Famous. They're going on their yachts and their cars, and each one's more messed up than the next, right? So because they've never had difficulty, they never had, it's been the lap of luxury their entire life. And so the Pasuk describes them as Yilachdim because they were childlike. They were acting like 18-year-olds their whole life. They never grew up, okay? So Rechavam ignores the advice of the elder wise men, and instead he runs to his buddies growing up, okay? Now, I'll share with you just, again, because I'm probably more young than old in this crowd. So this to me was, it reminded me of an entire controversy that none of you will know about, maybe one or two will know about, that happened a couple of months ago. And that was a comment, anyone know the name Phil Jackson?
Yeah.
Okay, we're starting off good. We're going to go downhill quickly. Okay, the Knicks. So Phil Jackson is the president of the New York Knicks. He was the coach of the Chicago Bulls. He was a basketball player, very successful. Okay. Phil Jackson, a few months ago, was asked about LeBron James. Anyone know LeBron James?
Yeah.
Basketball player. Okay, we're good. So LeBron James, we know, used to be on the Miami Heat, and he left for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So Phil Jackson was being interviewed about him leaving the Heat to go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he says the following. It had hurt. It had to hurt when they lost LeBron, them being the Miami Heat. That was definitely a slap in the face. But there were a lot of things that came out of that. When LeBron James was playing with the Heat, they used to go to Cleveland, and he wanted to spend the night. Teams don't do overnights. Teams just don't. So now the coach has to call the... and they got to figure out what to do. He finishes off the following. You can't hold up the whole team because you and your mom and your posse want to spend an extra night in Cleveland. Now, posse is a racially charged term. Let's just say they don't often talk about me in my posse, right? So it's a racially charged term. But what he was referring to was that LeBron James's agent is a childhood friend of his. Okay? Carter is his last name. And he hired, when he became rich and famous, he hired basically his friends to be his agents and his business managers, etc. And Jackson was really taking a shot at these guys, being like, who, his posse, like, your little friends who you think are going to come and be your business managers. But we all know that you just never grew up and you just want to hang out with your friends the whole time. And Jackson, and Carter, when he was interviewed about it afterwards, says, it's the word posse that I took offense to. If he would have said LeBron and his agent or LeBron and his business partners, that would have been a different thing. In other words, it was the perceived slight. Jackson viewed things the way we're viewing things. Guy with his childhood friends, lived a privileged life their whole life. How successful can they be? How competent can they be? They're a bunch of children. They're just playing around. They're the posse. And that's exactly the point he took offense to. He said, if you had treated me with respect, if you had called me an agent, then I wouldn't have been offended by your comment. And that's exactly what's going on here. Right? It's the word Yiladim, which is used in such a pejorative sense. Because what the Navi is basically saying is it's Rechavim and his posse. It's Rechavim and his friends that just never grew up. So he goes to his friends, who are, we know, immature, and immature people. So one of the things I've learned the most in the rabbinate is not to react to everything that happens to you. Right? As an 18, 19-year-old, I would have appreciated that much. That you realize that there are consequences to reacting. You realize that there's a value in taking the high road. You realize that oftentimes if someone yells at you and you don't yell back, they ended up apologizing even if you were actually wrong. Right? These are things you learn with age and with experience. So here you have people, though, that never had that. Everything has been handed to them. They haven't learned those life experiences. And with this introduction, you can already anticipate how they're going to react. Pasuk 9. Vayomer aleihem. So he says to them, Ma atem noatzim. What do you, guys, tell me. They're out for beers one night. What? Tell me what to do. V'nashiv davaras amazeh asher dibru elai lemor hakel mina ha'al asher natan avicha aleinu. Right, what should I tell them? V'yidabru elav, and they say back to him, ha'yiladim asher galu ito lemor. Again, it re-emphasizes that. Ko tomar la'am hazeh, this is what you should tell them, asher dibru elecha lemor, that which they told you, dot, dot, dot. What should you tell them? Ko tidabru alehem, katani ava mimasne avi. What does that mean? Katani is my small finger. My pinky is wider than my father's loins. In other words, you ain't seen nothing yet. You think my father was strict? My father was a little pussycat compared to what you're about to experience with me. In other words, don't start. Right? And again, imagine like a college bar fight where, like, you know, one guy's girlfriend's insulted and the other guy gets up and he says, did you just say that about, and you know, and they're like revving up, ready for that first punch to be thrown. So we know adults wouldn't do that. Adults know to walk away. But these guys, they're like looking to throw punches. It's almost like a leader using Twitter to just like insult people and put, that's exactly what's happening, right? Pick the fights. Go right at him. Tell him you ain't seen nothing yet. Okay? Don't take advice from people who actually have wisdom. Okay? So, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ve'ata aviha misa lechem ol kaved. My father, you think my father may have put a lot of taxes on you. Va'ani, but you know what I'm going to do? Osif aluchem. I'm going to compound it. I'm going to add on to it. Avi yisar eschem b'shoti. My father may have ruled you with a stick. Va'ani ayaser eschem ba'akravim. I'm going to rule you with scorpions. Okay? Obviously, scorpions being much worse than, right, Mitzvot David, right? Ha-mach-ivim od yoser. It caused a lot more pain to be bitten by a scorpion. Vayavo yiravam v'chol ha'am el rochavam b'yom ha-shlishi kashir diber ha-melech le'mor shuv elai b'yom ha-shlishi. So now, the third day has come. Everyone comes from the coffee shops back to the king's palace. Vayan ha-melech es ha'am kasha. And he responded very harshly. Vayazov esatzas azekenim asher yatsu. And he completely ignores the advice of the wise men. Vaydaber aleim katzas hayeladim leimor avi ichbid es ulchem v'ani osef aluchem avi yisar eschem b'shoti v'ani ayaser eschem b'akravim. Exactly as we said. V'lo shama hamelech el ha'am. Ki aisa siba mi'im Adonai leman hakim es devaro asher diber Adonai biyad achia shiloni el yiravam ben Nevat. Very interesting pasuk. Why didn't he listen to the people? It's not that Rechavam was necessarily a bad person. And we'll see that he probably was not a bad person. It's because Hashem orchestrated it that way. We're talking about free will again. Again, what's interesting about this pasuk is we know this throughout many stories in Tanakh. For example, the story of Purim. So in the story of Purim, we talk about how Hashem is not present. But when you read the whole story of Purim, you see that the hand of Hashem was guiding it the whole time. And that decisions that seemed irrational and almost ludicrous, it's because Hashem was manipulating things. The Paro story, very similar. Right? Why didn't Paro just let the Jewish people go? Because we know that Laman Das, that God orchestrated things to make a point. The Yosef story. A lot of things don't make sense in the Yosef story. And yet, how does Yosef, when the brothers feel bad, and they come to him and they say, we don't want you to be mad at us. What's his response? Why should I be mad at you? This was what Hashem wanted. Rarely do the Pesukim articulate that as overtly as it says here. Right? You want to know why Rechavim just did something stupid and irrational? The answer is because God wanted it this way. Because God had this plan that he wanted to divide the kingdom. Can't divide a kingdom if you have a popular king. So he made the kingdom unpopular. Yeah. Well, that's what makes them chachamim, is that you have to know the circumstances. That when you're in a big building campaign, I'll give you an example, right? In 1940, or whenever, when FDR started, you know, his his campaign of spending and, you know, right? The New Deal, exactly. So no one questioned that. And it sparked this humongous economic growth. But you would also appreciate that there could come, or there has come times in American history where the New Deal wouldn't be appropriate anymore, and it's time to cut back and not increase taxes and to cut taxes, right? That's the give and take of American history over the last, you know, 70 years. Yeah, so again, so when you're in a significant building campaign and you're trying to build a new building, so you increase dues a little bit. And then afterwards, when the people come and say, you know what, we just built you all this, got to lower our dues again. So you say, there's wisdom in saying, okay, you're right, we have our big building, now maybe we should try to lower dues a little bit. And then you raise them when you need them and you lower them, exactly. So that's exactly what's happening here. Okay? Vayar kol Yisrael, Pasuk Tezayin 16. Vayar kol Yisrael ki lo shama melech alehem v'yashivu ames amelech tavar lemor. So they realize they're not getting anywhere. And they answer, Ma lanu chelek b'David. You know what? You know those signs, not my president? So not our king. Okay? Right? We have nothing to do with you anymore. The Radak writes, Kolomer ma lanu od bo. Kivan she'enu shomea b'koleinu. You're nothing to me anymore. A king that's not even going to listen to our needs? You're going to ignore us? So you're not my king anymore. Right, malanu chelik b'David, v'lo nachala b'ven Yishai, lo alecha Yisrael ata, re'ei beischa David, v'yilech Yisrael le'o'alav. Very interesting words, right? V'lo nachala b'ven Yishai, and we have no nachala, we have no, basically, future with you. Lo'alecha Yisrael, ata re'ei beischa David, see your house, David. What does that mean, see your house, David? Very interesting words. Right, so Radak says what I would have thought. Kolomar re'e minish arimcha. Like, who? Go, enjoy, right? Who's with you anymore, David? Barashi adds a point. Re'e beischa beis hamikdash shebanisa l'cha levadcha yiyeh. Right. In other words, re'e beischa David. Shlomo, go. I want you to look at that house. That house that you just built, it's all yours, because we want nothing to do with it anymore. You built it. You're going to live in the palace by yourself, and we're not going to be there with you. It's very interesting terminology, right? In other words, you're on your own now, Rechavam. Okay? Vayelech Yisrael lo alav. In Yisrael, they left. They went home. Each one, they just, we're done. We want nothing to do with you anymore. Uvenei Yisrael hayoshvim ba'arei Yehuda vayimloch aleihem Rechavam. So Rechavam is still ruling over the Jews of Yehuda. Vayishlach HaMelech Rechavam. So how would you respond? Well, let's ask this question. Hey, if you were a leader who was just told by the people, we want nothing to do with you anymore. Don't forget, he went head to head at them. He challenged them. And he assumed they would back down. And instead they called his bluff. They played chicken with him. They said, okay, you're going to keep raising taxes? You want to take that tone with us? We're out. I want nothing to do with you anymore. So how do you anticipate him responding? So you could either, right, you expect him to respond forcefully. He's going to unleash a Twitter attack now on the people that just insulted him. So that's exactly what he does. Vayishlach HaMelech Rechavam es Adoram Asher Alamas. So he now sends Adoram to go collect taxes. And you know what that's called? A kamikaze mission. Vayirgamu kol Yisrael bo Evan vayamos. It's like the ultimate chutzpah. You're going to now send a tax collector? Jewish people stoned him. Ve'amelech Rechavam hitametz la'alot b'merkava lanus liyushalayim. So Rechavam gets out of there. Like, he realizes this isn't a climate that's going to be good for him. The Secret Service, get him out quickly. Because once you kill the tax collector, you know who they're coming for next. They're coming for Rechavam. So Rechavam now realizes, right, Vayivshu'u Yisrael b'veis David ara yom hazeh. And they rejected Beis David up until this day. So now, what's going to happen? But, I mean, this is like political intrigue. You can't make this stuff up. This would be right out of a reality show. Vayhi kishmoa kol Yisrael kishav yiravam vayishlechu vayikro so el aida vayamlicho so al kol Yisrael. So Rechavam now like goes back home. And the people say, no, not so fast. You're our new king. right? Lohayachare based Avizula si Shevet Yehuda Levado. And the tribes break off. Yeravam is now what we're going to call the northern tribes. He is the king over them, and the only one left for Malchus based David is Shevet Yehuda, is Rechavam. So Vayavoi Rechavam Yushalayim. So Rechavam now comes back to his, right? He's now in the Situation Room. He's in his comfortable surroundings, and he now has the ability to start plotting. Vayakelas Kobes Yudav Shevet Binyamin Mea Ushmonim Elef Bachur Osei Milchama. So he, right, they're at DEFCON 5 now. He's gearing up for battle. So he gathers together, mobilizes 180,000 troops. Lilachem es Beis Yisrael Ashiva Samluchal Rechavam Ben Shlomo. He's not taking this sitting down. He says, you want to separate? Not so fast. He gets together, 180,000 is a big army. So he gathers together a huge army, and we're about to have a civil war. Now, immediately what I thought of when I was reading this was it took me back to a lot of the Begin Ben-Gurion stories. That you read prime ministers, you read Danny Gordas' book about Begin, in references three, four cases where Israel was on the cusp of a civil war after the Altalena, right? Israel was on the cusp of civil war, and Begin refused. Begin backed down, if you remember. Begin said, under no circumstances am I going to raise a fist against a fellow Jew, even if it means Ben-Gurion getting his way and me having to back down. And in many ways, that was the greatness of Begin, that while he was a fighter, he never fought against another Jew. He always knew there was a limit to that. So here we have Rechavam on the cusp, right? And he's about to wage a massive civil war. And what happens? Pasuk Chavez, Pasuk 22, Vayhi Dvar Elohim El Shmaya, Ish Elohim Lemor. So God now comes to Shmaya, who's an Ish Elohim, Emor el Rechavam ben Shlomo melech Yehuda ve'al kol beis Yehuda v'nyamin v'yeser am lemor. I want you to go right now. Ko amar Adonai lo salu. Stop. Right? Cease and desist. V'lo sila chamum. You're not allowed to wage war imachaychem ben Yisrael. Shuvu ish leveso ki meiti niya davar hazeh. Don't fight against it. You want to take it up with anyone, take it up with me. But don't fight each other. V'yishmu es davar Adonai v'yashuvu lalechas kidvar Adonai. And everyone heard this? And they back down. What's interesting about that is that we've been painting Rechavam as what type of a person? Aggressive, strong, almost like a bad person. Right? You don't like Rechavam. I'll put it this way. You don't like Rechavam at this point in the parak. What's astounding is that despite, you got to picture it right now. Like his blood pressure is going, the adrenaline is rushing, their battle cries, they have the war paint on. And all of a sudden God says, no, I don't want you to do this. And you know what they're all like? Okay, we'll listen to God. That's a very impressive thing. It's something to keep in mind, that while we've been painting Rechavam as a very bad person, he calls off a civil war. He accepts what has happened simply because God told him to. Not everyone would do that, by the way. So again, before we bash Rechavam, obviously there was something very virtuous in this. Pasuk 25, Vayiven Yeravam es Shechem Behar Ephraim, Vayeshe Ba Vayetze Misham Vayiven es Pnuel. Vayomer Yeravam Belibo. And now is when everything goes downhill. Because Yeravam says to himself, what's going to happen? Right? People are going to, it's going to come time for the Shlosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and they're going to go back to Yerushalayim, and they're going to see, what are they going to see when they go to Yerushalayim? They're going to see gorgeous roads, and they're going to see a beautiful Beis HaMikdash in opulence and splendor and a palace and a king and a queen. And they're going to say, what do we need to live in the, schlocky northern kingdoms? Things weren't so bad under Shlomo and under Rechavam. So he says, Bilibo, Ata Tashuva Mamlacha LeBeis David. If that happens, then they're going to return the Malucha to Beis David. If they go up to Yerushalayim to offer sacrifices, they're going to reestablish their allegiance with Rechavam. They're going to kill me. So he feels threatened, right? Why does he feel so threatened? So again, the Meforshim point out that when Re'ein Yeshiva Be'azara Ela Lamalchei Beis David Beliba Bilvad, the only people who could sit in a certain place of the Beis Hamikdash in the Azara were the members of Beis David, the members of Malchus Beis David. So what would happen? Right? Imagine John Doe, Reuven. Reuven tells his cousins from New York that he is the rabbi of Boca Raton Synagogue. And he builds himself up. Everyone thinks it's so impressive. All of a sudden, his cousins tell him, we're coming down for yeshiva break. Can't wait to hear your drasha. So he's panicking now. Because it happens to be, maybe he is a rabbi. Maybe he's the rabbi of the teen minyan. Right? Not that there's anything wrong with the rabbi of the teen minyan. But their cousins are going to come. They're going to see Rabbi Goldberg sitting up there. They're going to see Reuven sitting down here. And they're going to say, that's not so impressive. Well, you're not so hot as we thought you were. So that's what they're afraid of. That when they come and they see Rechavam sitting up there and Yeravam sitting down there, they're going to say, he's a fraud. Right? We were duped. Again, we know that time heals a little bit. So this is what Yeravam's nervous about. So what does he do? Pasuk Chavchet. Vayiva'etz ha-melech v'yas shnei eglei zahav. So he makes two golden calves. We know about that. Vayomer aleim rav lachem me'alos Yerushalayim. You don't have to go all the way to Yerushalayim. Hinei Elohecha Yisrael Hasher Alucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. This is your God who took you out of Egypt. Now, parenthetically, what is the exact verbiage that's used by Chet Ha'egel? I'll read it to you. And all you have to do is keep your eyes inside your Tanakh and tell me how similar the two are. The Pasuk says, Vayomru Eila Elohecha Yisrael Hasher Alucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Almost the exact same verbiage. So clearly, the fact that he takes golden calves, he uses the same terminology. Yeravim is trying to conjure up the imagery of Chet Ha'egel. Why? What does he gain by that? You tell me. There are other similarities, by the way. What are Aaron's children's names? No. Aaron. Nadav and Avihu. What were Yeravim's children's names? You don't know this yet. But. Nadav ve'Avia. Okay? Almost the exact same thing. So why? So why is he doing this? Why are we drawing the comparisons between the story of Aaron and the story here? What's gained by that? So Amar Lahem Radak writes, Hello Aaron Asal Yisrael Egel Ahashro Shechina Bo B'makom Moshe Shelo Haya Lahem. Right? Why did Aaron agree to build the Egel? What were the people struggling with? That Moshe was their access to God. Moshe is no longer there. And so Aaron felt validated in trying to find a replacement. Now let's bring that equation over here. The Beis HaMikdash is their connection to Hashem. They no longer have access to the Beis HaMikdash because they're now divided. So what you do in the absence of Moshe, the Beis HaMikdash, is you create an Egel. You create idolatry. That's what he says. Gamata, gamatem, atasha in lachem makom ashchina. You don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. Shehu Yerushalayim, because that's all the way down south in Yerushalayim. So nasa egel bimkomo lahashro shchina bo. So instead, we're going to make an egel. Now, is Aaron the bad guy or the good guy in that story? A little bit of both, right? On the one hand, he's the bad guy. God obviously is not happy with him. But at the end of the day, what does he still get? He still ends up as the Kohen Gadol. God forgives the Jewish people and he still ends up as the Kohen Gadol. And so Yeravim is making himself out to be the Aaron HaKohen. Basically, yeah, I do some shady things on the side, but I'm the good guy here. Okay, so he's drawing a comparison between him and Aaron HaKohen. So Vayasem Esa Echad Bebeis El Ve'Esa Echad Nasan what I just read? Ve'Esa Echad Natan Bidan. So he puts them in Beit El, he puts them in Dan. What's the significance of that? Beit El, we know, of course, is where? Beit El is what happened in Beit El? Yaakov's dream. What does the Torah tell us by Yaakov's dream? Vizeh Shara Shamayim. This is the gate to heaven. Not a coincidence that he put a place of worship in Beit El. Dan, what was Dan? So we didn't learn this together, but Dan was one of the places of worship during the times of the Shoftim. And so he picked two places that were logical. In other words, everything Yeravim is trying to do is to make it rationalizable to the people. If you just come out and you say you worship idolatry, they can say, yeah, we're not worshiping idolatry. We know that's one of the bad things. But if you can make it so that they can rationalize it to themselves, oh, Beit El's not so bad. We know Beit El. Yaakov Avinu had a vision in Beit El, so can we? Dan wasn't so bad. It was good enough in the time of the Shoftim. Why can't it be good enough now? Worshipping an eagle can't be so bad. Hashem, after all, forgave the Jewish people after Chet Egel. Aaron was vindicated after Chet Egel. Everything he does is opens up the door for someone who wants to rationalize it to find something to rationalize about it. So that's number one that he does. Okay? Number two, Vayas as Beis Bamot. So he makes a place of worship, right? Asa Bayit Uvana Shambano. He makes altars. Again, not allowed because you have the Beis Hamikdash, but had happened throughout history. So people could, what's the difference if it happened 30 years ago? It's good enough, you know, if at the dances and, you know, 30 years ago they did that, why can't they do that at the dances nowadays? Right? That's, if the Bamos were good enough back then, they're good enough now. Vayas Kohanim Miktsos Ha'am Asher Lo Ayu Mimnei Levi. And who does he appoint as the Kohanim? Everyone. Ordinary people. Now, why is that significant? Remember from a few weeks ago, remember the Milo. Remember when one of the things that really frustrated people was that Shlomo had filled in the Milo. And we said, what was the Milo? The Milo was access, basically. Spiritual access, political access. But it was the way for the masses to interact with Shlomo. And what was clear from that was that the masses were feeling shut out from Shlomo's elite camp. Very similar to the election, right? Where certain populations in America felt that, you know, there were the elitists on the East Coast and the West Coast, but the Rust Belt was being totally forgotten. So that's what's happening here. So Yeravam, this Rust Belt, we'll call it, the masses, so they previously felt shut out by Shlomo, and Yeravam says, not only am I going to include you, but I'm going to make you the Kohanim. I'm going to make it America first. I'm going to make it Kohanim first. Now, that's essentially what he's doing. And he's investing in, you know, in the automobile industry, you know, industries that'll help them. That's essentially what he's doing. He's making them feel good about themselves. A population that was previously feeling excluded, he's now bringing them in. Pasuk Lamed Beis, 32. Vayas Yeravam Chad B'chodesh Hashmini, B'chamisha Asar Yom L'chodesh K'chag Asher B'Yehuda. He made a new holiday that was similar to the holiday that existed in Yehuda. Now, what holiday is this? In the eighth month. So the eighth month is what month? Nisan, Iyan, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei, Cheshvan. So we're obviously a month off, because the 15th day should really be the seventh month, which is Sukkot. So he's a month late. Now, why would he do, if he was making his own holiday, wouldn't you make it a month earlier than a month late? In other words, the whole point is to prevent people from going to Yerushalayim, so you'd rather make it in the sixth month, so you could tell people, come, celebrate Sukkot, and then when real Sukkot comes, what are they going to say? We already did it. So why the eighth month? So the Mefarshim point out that really what's happening here is that he added a month. He made the previous year a leap year. So that the calendar in the north was different than the calendar in the south. So what was the sixth month in the north was what month in the south? The seventh month. So the seventh month in the north was what month in the south? The eighth month. So what essentially happened was that when you came to Sukkot, which was the seventh month, because they know when Sukkot is in Tishrei, comes to Tishrei, all of a sudden Yeravam says, surprise, by the way, really, Sukkot was last month, and you guys missed it. So you might as well celebrate it here. Now what does that accomplish? Why go through all these hoops? Because once you make people realize that it's okay to miss Sukkot in Yerushalayim, all of a sudden it's okay to miss Sukkot in Yerushalayim. No lightning struck me, right? Nothing bad happened. I turned on the light on Shabbos. I'm the same person that I was 10 minutes ago. No lightning struck me. My parents haven't thrown me out of the house, right? So that's exactly what he's doing. In other words, by making them realize that they missed it, the real, the authentic, the real McCoy, they missed it, and life went on. No one noticed. No lightning bolt struck. Nothing bad happened. So all of a sudden, he has made them able to rationalize that, you know what, maybe we can make up our own rules. So again, it's all tactical what he did. And again, they're worshiping all these things. I have a note here. One second. Okay, pasuk lamed gimel vayal al mizbeach asher asav beis el b'chamisha asar yom b'chodesh hashmini b'chodesh asher badam libod vayas chag levnei Yisrael vayal al mizbeach laktir. And that's how we end our paragraph, our chapter, with them sacrificing in Beit El. So what we saw this week was really things going from bad to worse, because we left in a very depressing tone last week with Shlomo dying, with the prophecy that the kingdom was going to be split, and it was somewhat of a cliffhanger. Well, now we find out what happened. And what happened was the division of Malchus Yehuda in Yisrael, where the really a lot of political intrigue. With you see Rechavim's mistakes, you see him back down when God tells him, this one's on me, don't fight it, this is going to happen anyways. And then Yeravam, who gets exactly what he wants. He has the people, he has the power. But what happens when a person in leadership lets power get to his head? What happens? They misuse it. They abuse it. And that's exactly what Yeravam does. Yeravam is so paranoid. Right? What sparks this? It's not that he's evil. What sparks? It's his paranoia. That he's worried that maybe they won't see me as a strong leader and they'll go back to Rechavim. And that's what leads this whole chain of events that we're going to continue next week, which are horrific. We see this other cases in Tanakh. Think about the story of Achashverosh. Rav Soloveitchik has a very famous article about the Purim story where he writes, you want to know why Achashverosh makes no sense? It's because he's constantly responding out of paranoia. Don't forget, he's in his third year of the reign. The parties, everything he's doing is trying to consolidate power because he's paranoid that someone's going to come and try to rebel against him. That's why he reacts so harshly to Vashti. That's why he reacts so harshly to Big Son Vaseresh, the two people that were, you know, plotting against him. That's why he kills Haman the second he finds out that Haman was plotting against him. Paranoia is a very bad trait in a leader, because when leaders get paranoid, they react in irrational ways. You see that in the Achashverosh story, and you see that in our story here. What inspires Yeravam to do honestly stupid things, which he probably knows are bad, is his sense of paranoia. And again, that perhaps could be a lesson for us nowadays as well. Everyone have a great week. We'll continue next week.